live from the Findlay Toyota Studios. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Beginning of the NFL season. Get jacked up. That's our job here for the next 3 hours. Really, the next 2 hours, because we'll be on during the game in the 5 o'clock hour. We go 3 to 6, and then we hand it off at 7 to the Dan Mullen radio show. That is back tonight. That will be on 12:30, the game. Interesting lineup of all of our stuff going on today. It's one of our busiest nights of the year. We've got the Aces game. That'll start up with pregame in the 6 o'clock hour here on ESPN Las Vegas. Thursday Night Football, Eagles-Cowboys will be on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Aviators with the voice of baseball in Las Vegas, Matt Neverett. That's over on R&R 920. And then Dan Mullen Radio Show will be coming along on 12:30 the game. We have four sports stations. It's been a while. We've got four sports stations, if you didn't know. So mark it down, 12:30 for the Dan Mullen Radio Show. And we'll tell you a lot more about what's going on over at Parkway Tavern for the show. Griffin is here on this Thursday. Griffin, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. You know, a lot of people would see a busy day like today and cower.
Cower, yes. I can't handle it. It's too much programming and too much football.
Too much sports all in one night. Hey, you're right. You're dang right. That's what we're doing here at ESPN Las Vegas, at LV Sports Network. We are busy, and we could not love it anymore.
Toughen up, Buttercup! Handle all the football that we're going to give you and the sports world is going to give you. Damn it! We've got college football tonight, which I'm actually very interested in both of these games. James Madison is an incredibly, I'll be weird and call it a plucky program, has been highly successful moving up from FCS to FBS. They're at Louisville. I blanked there for a second because I was like, do I know their nickname? I think it's the Dukes. At Louisville, getting 14.5. That starts up at 4 o'clock. Northern Illinois, good program. Going to be joining the Mountain West down the road. Weird, right? Remember the last year they pulled off the upset against Notre Dame. They're going to be taking on Maryland out of the Big Ten. They're getting 16.5. Maryland had a freshman quarterback just go ballistic last week. Week two, adjustments. We'll see what he has. And then, of course, the big game that everyone cares about. The Micah Parsons-less Cowboys and the Eagles will be tracking this number for the next 2 hours. Over at William Hill, Eagles are steady at 8. Total is going up, sitting at 48. Lots of people playing the over. 76% of the tickets on the over, 48. The game betting, though, not a surprise, right? Over, favorite. About 67% of the tickets are willing to lay the 8 with the Eagles. I don't know if I am. We'll give out a pick. So we're going to bring in Scott Seidenberg from VSiN. That'll be at 4:45 today. Were you shocked to see the news that during this long stretch where Jerry Jones wasn't getting along and really not negotiating much with Michael Parsons, as he calls him, we call him Micah Parsons, that Jarrah did get more than a few calls from the Eagles?
No, because as much as I hate it, because again, I got good buddies who are Eagles fans, our own Greg Salerno, great people, but I also have a little disdain for the Philadelphia Eagles. Mostly because they are currently the most well-run franchise in the league. And
well, between, you think about it, I think these are the teams where you look and you're like, wait a second. How do you keep adding talent? Do you have a salary cap? What the hell is going on? Is there a manipulation? The Rams, the Chiefs, and the Eagles. Rams paid a price for 1 year. I don't feel like the Chiefs have had to pay much of a price as they signed guys to big deals. They keep drafting good players to fill in, like how they got a starting tackle at 32. I know he was injured, but Josh Simmons, quick recovery, going to walk right in. It's just like the rest of the league's asleep at the freaking wheel. Watch if Xavier Worthy in year two really turns into a Tyreek Hill-type weapon. That's going to be egg on the face of the NFL, most importantly, the Buffalo Bills. And then the Eagles just seem to add. And the fact that they could even kick the tires on Micah Parsons and a trade, you're like, wait, how would they even do that? But they were in the running, according to a Darren Schefter.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people might see that they actually reached out and thought to themselves, you know, oh, how is he's losing it? Why would he even attempt to see if the Cowboys would trade to him? Because Howie Roseman, again, the one of the best ran franchises in the league, has the best GM for them in Howie Roseman, and Howie Roseman's the kind of guy where I don't care if we're division rivals. If you are going to give away an elite player like Micah Parsons, I'm going to reach out. I'm going to do everything I can in my power to overturn every stone and make sure that I can make this roster for the Eagles as good as possible. So it's like I said with the Raiders. If the Raiders hadn't reached out, all the teams who didn't reach out to see if they even had a chance with Micah Parsons, it's foolish. It's absolutely foolish.
If the Eagles had called up and said, all right, two ones, couple of players, because I'm thinking Thomas Booker, not quite as attractive as Kenny Clark, who went in the Packers deal. What if they slightly surpassed what the Packers offered? Would Jerry Jones have traded Micah Parsons in the division to a rival, to a direct rival?
I mean, you'd like to think no. You would like to think that Jerry's
got some
sense.
I'd like to think that too, but I think you would do it.
I do too.
I think that's what this deal was all about. It wasn't about winning. It wasn't about making sure that your rival in the division can't surpass you. Frankly, trading him to the Packers was outrageous. It's arguably, I mentioned the Rams as a great organization in the NFC. I mean, arguably the Packers are one of the best three or four organizations in the NFC, and you just hand Micah Parsons to them. Now they're going to have him for the next 5 or 6 years. That's your competition. If you ever get to the point where you can win 11 or 12 games again and challenge to go to this NFC title game, which has been completely elusive for 30 years, now the Packers are standing in your way with your player. So I wouldn't put it past him. He might have got so emotional, looked at the deal, and said, you know what? Screw it. I'm so confident that we'll make the right first-round picks. Michael Parsons. It's Mike, I know. Doesn't want to be here. I'll give him to the Eagles. I think Jarrah would have done it. Raiders news that's in today. I don't think this is shocking, but here's the issue here. It's not really an issue. Amari Cooper's signing was so overhyped. Like, I figured, hey, you know what? He comes in, maybe he's a guy who can challenge for the two slot, the three slot, give you, 13 out of 17 games played. I don't know, 40 catches, 600 yards, maybe 5 touchdowns, right? He comes in and people are like, they did that to replace Jakobi Meyers. Wait a second. It was just the timing of all of it. And there were a lot of people who were like, message to Jakobi Meyers. Okay, well, what's the message now? Because Amari Cooper strapped it up for like a week and a half. And today, he said, I just don't have a desire to play anymore. I'm going to retire. He's hoping to retire as a Raider. You know, there's easier ways to do this rather than go through camp for a week and a half. But, yeah, Amari Cooper, wide receiver, I think a lot of people had high hopes for him, is going to retire. Listen to Chip Kelly here as he kind of sets everyone straight. Like, let's relax. This isn't calamitous. Amari Cooper wasn't locked in to be really anything for us, you know, let alone the number two receiver.
Well, I feel because he's a talented player now, but he called Pete this morning, had a good conversation with Pete, and I think he's just done playing. But you could still see the talent was there. But we weren't. We still have today, Thursday, Friday, Saturday's practice session before we have to finalize who was up and who was down, and we hadn't made any final decisions on was he going to play in the first game or not in the first game. You know, he was training with us and got reps and all those other things, but it was a matter of, usually I think for everybody, you're not making your final 46-man roster or 48-man roster until Saturday anyway, so we hadn't had any discussions. We said we were going to go through Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then we'd determine who was up and who was down. So it's unfortunate because I think the world of him. I think he's a heck of a football player. He's had a heck of an NFL career, but he knows in his heart what he wants to do. So I wish him the best. I've always been a big fan of his.
Yeah, I don't think there's any shots fired there, but I think Chip Kelly was making it clear. We don't even know if Amari was going to be active at the beginning of the season. He was still working his way onto the team. So this is not a disaster. There are other receivers that are on the sideline right now who they can sign, veteran receivers. If you go with the philosophy of our buddy, Adam Hill, he believes don't sign old receivers. This is what you got, okay? You got Dante Thornton. You got Jack Betch when he's ready to go. You got Trey Tucker. You got young receivers. You got two tight ends. They're both young. Keep the young guys. Don't go out and sign 31 and 32-year-olds. Reminder, William Hill, Pro Pick'em Contest. Deadline is on Sunday morning. Don't go on Sunday morning. If you check out Ask Steve Cofield at ESPN Las Vegas, you can see a video that I shot last night from one of the William Hill full-service locations. It was slow. It was about 8 o'clock. I know when to go. Don't go last minute to sign up for contest. It's going to take a while, and you're also, frankly, you're inconveniencing people who are playing in the moment and on a Sunday morning, because the deadline technically is on Sunday morning. Get in now. But the deadline is on Sunday, the beginning of the regular slate. You don't have to pick the Thursday for National Football League. $25 entry fee gets you in the action for 18 weeks of the regular season. All you're doing is picking winning teams. No point spreads. Over $1.2 million in cash prizes. 215 season wins. If you go with that great record, you get $1 million bonus. Buy four entries. You get a fifth free. So get in. $25. Pro Pick'em Contest. I had Chris over at Arizona Charlie's West help me out. Incredibly patient. Was really cool. Remember, Progressive cards are out. For just $5, you can win upwards of $50,000. It's a Progressive, so it will carry over if people don't win in a given week. And, of course, if you sign up for the William Hill Nevada mobile sports app, they have a $250 bonus bet for first-time signer-uppers. William Hill, Pro Pick'em Contest. Get in now.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Let me give you a little list here. Let's see. Becky Quick, Mike Emanuel, Kelly Whiteside, Lauren Sisler, Catherine Tappan, the McCourty twins now, Sean O'Hara, Alexi Lawless. Those are all people who went to Rutgers. I talk about that school often, even here in Las Vegas. Tara Sullivan might be the biggest media star out of all those people. She's been with the Boston Globe a long time, and she's going to help us preview Patriots and Raiders. Tara, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? That's some heady company there. I'm not sure it would rise to the top, but I appreciate it.
You know, the sad thing is it's like all people around our era. I'm sure there's like tons of people younger, but I'm getting old, feeble, and I forget things.
I'm with you, buddy. I think we're carrying the torch anyway. We're leading the way.
There you go. Okay, let's talk New England football, and we'll break down some hardcore stuff in a couple of minutes. What are the expectations from Patriots fans and the media for this season?
You know, it depends on who you ask. I mean, the rosiest thinkers among them, you know, are talking about the playoffs, which I personally think is a little premature. You know, but they just think the turnaround is really in full swing, and you know, the AFC East, you can get that second spot or whatever. So I think the media has certainly been more tempered than the fan base. But, you know, I would say overall it's trending up. I mean, after last year's disaster, you know, it just feels like it's at least on the right track this year, this time of year now. You know what I mean? It definitely feels better. Even though last year had a sense of like a new start, I think there were enough doubts where with Vrabel, it just feels more confident this year.
We bet everything here, and obviously in Nevada and Massachusetts and New England, pretty big on sports betting too. The total at the books is 8.5 wins with a lean on the under. I personally think that's still a little bit high. Where are you?
Yeah, I guess 8-9. I mean, okay. I'm not big on betting or I'm not the greatest predictor, but we do it in print, and you know, I think they don't have the hardest schedule. I mean, we know that. It's not like, you know, I used to cover the Giants who were terrible last year and have like the second or third hardest schedule in the NFL. The Patriots definitely have some more winnable games. But a lot has to go right. A lot has to go right. And I just think they have so many issues of depth at different positions that it's going to be hard to get to that 8 or 9 win.
Tara Sullivan, Boston Globe is up on Cofield and Company. Raiders will open the season on the road in New England. All right, let's talk about some of the keys on the Pat side. First of all, Drake May, still very young, but now he's with an offensive genius. Didn't work out for Josh McDaniels here in Raiderland, but how do you think that's going to go with McDaniels back and now Drake May as a student?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that storyline, as I am in general with quarterbacks going into their second year, and I think this this year's group of second-year quarterbacks is very interesting, right, from Jaden Daniels and his breakout and some of the other guys from that draft. So I do think there is a huge expectation that Drake May takes a leap, not only because he's had that one full year under his belt or the second half when he started, but because of what you said, you know, uniting with Josh McDaniels, who has such a better offensive coordinator resume than anybody, you know, than certainly who he worked with last year or just anybody the Patriots have had since Josh McDaniels was there before. So, you know, and the introduction of or the bringing on Stephon Diggs, you know, so there's a few more weapons drafting along the offensive line, but they still don't have enough. So I think that Drake May will make a leap, but a lot depends on what's around him.
I want to mention Diggs because I wonder what he's been like. Apparently, I don't think he's spoken a whole lot, but after the whatever that pink stuff was in the baggie on the boat and then, you know, dating Cardi B, I think a guy like him could really help Drake May, but I wonder if Diggs is going to be focused, if he still has anything left.
Yeah, that's the bigger question, right, in terms of football, is just where he is physically and what is still there. He did do a media session the other day. He opened with sort of not so much an apology, but a thank you for the patience on behalf of media members. And he said all the right things. I don't have to be the primary target. I don't have to be, you know, it's this is a different system. I'm here to help. I'm part of the machine. But I can't help but think that for Drake May, like having that kind of weapon, you know, we know May has an arm. He's looking to throw it downfield. So that kind of weapon. And then somebody like Hunter Henry, you know, the tight end who comes back this year and is somebody that May enjoyed working with last year. I do think, you know, the bigger question, you pegged it exactly. It's not so much, I think Diggs's head is in the right place based on the interviews and how kind of uneventful training camp was after the crazy headlines. But I, you know, it's just where he is physically.
Very big if the Patriots have a running game. Ramondre Stevenson is a Vegas guy, but he's been a little dinged up. They made a big investment in Trevion Henderson, and I think people there are really excited for him. Do you think he takes over at some point as the bell cow?
Yeah, it wouldn't be shocking. You know, it's unusual. I'm not in training camp every day, right? General columnist. So I'm you know, I'm off at a bunch of different things, but I'm reading the same stuff as everybody else, and I'm checking in every day. And when I start hearing, like, Curtis Martin comparisons, I'm like, okay, this is somebody we have to pay attention to, you know? So I wouldn't be shocked at all. Listen, if the fumbling issue comes up with, you know, Stevenson again, boom, I think the hook will be quick. Vrabel is definitely a very no-nonsense guy. We've known that from his NFL history. We've seen it, you know, just the way he's been with kind of some ruthless cuts and sort of changing over the entire leadership of the team in terms of captains and things like that. So, I wouldn't be shocked based on the very little we've seen in training camp. I don't think anybody would be shocked if ultimately there's, you know, if there's a changing of the guard there.
So I get the reason for excitement because Jerod Mayo seemed miscast in the role, and early on it didn't feel like the organization had his back. Can you get a feel for a vibe change in terms of having a guy who's trying it for the first time versus a veteran dude and another, you know, homegrown Patriot in Vrabel?
Yeah, there's definitely a different vibe in that regard. And you hate to say it like an adult in charge of the room because I don't think that was the issue with Mayo. I just think hindsight proves or shows or unequivocally shows he just wasn't ready, right? It was too soon. He should have, he just would have been better off with more time as an assistant or as a coordinator. And I agree with you. There were times it felt that the organization let him down because they've made a lot of changes. They're trying to shore up drafting and things like that as well. But he never helped himself either with sort of inconsistency in press conferences and saying things and then walking them back and kind of not really understanding a lot of what went into being a head coach besides just the stuff on Sunday. So I think that's the difference you get with Vrabel. I mean, the resumes are just completely different. And I think for a lot of Patriot fans in particular, there's a little bit of that, well, this should have been the guy originally, right? Like a lot of people thought Vrabel was Robert Kraft's favorite before Belichick left, you know, that he would be the guy to replace him. So it just feels like delayed and that this is really kind of the next chapter and last year is kind of a blip.
Patriots and Raiders on Sunday, and from the Boston Globe, Tara Sullivan's helping us break down the Patriots on the field and off. So I wanted to mention one more thing off the field, and I really believe, and I'll give you an example here, with the Raiders, when McDaniels was here and this last go-around, way too many leaks, way too much nonsense getting out. I really do think having a tight ship is key to what goes on the field and all over the organization. I saw Vrabel kind of pissed about 2 weeks ago with the Polk injury, where he started talking about that leaking about season-ending shoulder surgery. And he said, I'd like to find out where those reports came from. There's some rats around here. Is there still a problem in the organization? Is it the crafts? Like, who's there who would be leaking stuff? Because to me, that's detrimental to what Vrabel and everyone else is trying to do.
Yeah, it's a tough one for me, right? Because, of course, I'm in the information business. So I'd be looking for the people to leak. Like, I don't want to rail on those guys. But I completely do understand what you're saying, particularly when a team is going bad. When a team is in these tough spots, the rebuilding, that's when you want to plug the leaks, right? But that's when there are more disgruntled people or frustrated people in the building, and the leaks are more likely to happen. So I get it, and it does, you know, I understand, because sometimes people feel like that information should be out there or whatever, right? So, but that being said, I thought the rats comment was quite harsh, personally. Yeah. I was like, whoa, you know, he really is trying to send a message, whether it was to the reporters or to the, you know, people inside his own building. You know, I can't imagine that it's from the ownership group, because I think that they are taking Vrabel's lead. I do think the ownership, you know, Robert Kraft, they're very much kind of lining up behind Vrabel right now. So, you know, there's so many other possibilities, but I can almost guarantee that Vrabel went back in with a Belichickian, like, reminder to everybody in the building, like, that has to stop, because I want to be the only person delivering any of that sort of information.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned Chapel Bill, because for like 18 years, pretty tight ship in Patriots land, and then for the last four or five, and then the leaks started to come out. Man, what do you think so far of what the Belichick summer and then the debut? I know people in New England have a lot of thoughts about Belichick in North Carolina.
Yeah. I mean, the debut, you know, listen, it was bad, it was ugly, but, like, I'm not ready to, like, draw the curtain on Bill Belichick's coaching career. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of change, and the roster turnover in college football is different. And so as bad as that loss was, like, I'm not ready to think he can't coach anymore, that he wouldn't rebuild, he won't eventually rebuild that program. I just don't get how much he has changed seemingly fundamentally. Like, I wrote a column, like, if Bill Belichick, the Patriots coach, hired Bill Belichick, the Carolina coach, he would have fired him a day later, like, for all of the garbage off the field. Like, I just don't understand, whatever your opinion about having such a younger girlfriend and all of that, like, really, I'm not even in the business of judging your personal life in that regard, except that this is the guy who preached every day, no distractions, keep your eye on, right? And so, and then he just invited these ridiculous distractions. I mean, that sit-down interview on CBS this morning was utterly mind-boggling, what went on there. Like, him needing somebody else to run interference to answer a question?
Right.
Like, the guy was the best ever at just obfuscating, right? We're on to Cincinnati. I mean, he was the best at it. So I just, that's the part I just don't understand. And I've asked people that I know in the business who have coached with him or coached under him, like, what happened? And the only answer I ever get is, I don't know. Wow. I don't know. So I find it very strange. I don't think he's forgotten how to coach football. And I think that North Carolina can still build a program under him. But the person said, I don't know. I find the whole thing just really wacky.
We're supposed to be completely objective in the media, not let things affect us. But my Lord, some of the Patriots media, especially TV and radio, they want their pound of flesh with Belichick. Some of the stuff that's come out, a lot of payback.
Well, and it's like, because it comes from the top, like, Robert Kraft has been so snipey about it, too. I had to fire him when they insisted the day after. It was a mutual parting of the ways. And now, I guess there was the Boston Herald just broke a story that Belichick's not going to allow, he doesn't allow Patriot scouts because of the way they treated him. But Kraft is trying to clean it up now, saying that he'll have a statue for Bill eventually. Like, it's just, there's so much tit for tat, right? And a lot of stuff going on because the way, listen, most of these things never, I've said this before, none of these relationships ever ends well. The fact that theirs went as well as it did for 20 plus years truly is the remarkable part of the story, but it doesn't change our fascination with just how you know, just how bitter it is at the end of it.
So what do you think? Will Patriots fans get their mind off of Belichick with a win on Sunday? Will the Patriots, they are favored. I kind of think it's an even game. Will they take out the Raiders?
I think just because of, like, the bump, you know, the Vrabel bump, and listen, Drake May will probably come out and overthrow his first five passes because the kid needs to take, like, a calming pill before a game, and I think that's something he does have to work on a little bit. But I think that they'll get, I do think they'll have, like, that bump from Vrabel and kind of that energy and being home and that kind of thing, but I just don't know how long that can carry them. But I probably will pick them for Sunday. Not a knock on the Raiders, just kind of like a, you know, I think the Patriots will just have enough juice to get that first win.
Tyra, you're awesome. Glad to see you're doing well. And appreciate the time here as football season is on the way. The preview was excellent. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
There she is. Tyra Sullivan, Boston Globe, Raiders, currently a 2.5-point dog at the Patriots. I think the Raiders will finish the season with more wins than the Patriots, but that doesn't mean they get the opening win on the road. That bump thing is a big deal. There should be a Pete Carroll bump as well, but maybe the energy from Vrabel, young quarterback. Well, you know, in the end, what's it going to come down to? We'll break this down a lot tomorrow, too. Which of the running games, and it's all headed up by young running backs, which of the running games actually gets off and is productive?
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
We got Raiders-Patriots on Sunday. Remember, early start, 10 a.m. Raiders in New England. 5 o'clock on Saturday evening, UNLV hosts UCLA. They've been looking forward to this game for a while. Get a Big Ten team in from L.A. Hopefully UCLA will travel. They didn't lose momentum in terms of their fans not being excited. They got kind of beat up and crushed physically, 43-10 against Utah. If you didn't go to the first game against Idaho State for the Rebels, then maybe you missed the new bleachers right behind the south end zone. For the longest time since they've been playing games there, there was a big void, just kind of a concrete floor, and the stands weren't pulled out. So UNLV's like, you know what? Let's just put some stands back there. And students are right there on the field. It was pretty loud. It'll be jam-packed this time around. I know they were pushing for 50,000, which would be amazing. I'd guess, conservatively, at least in the mid-30s, that's what they're hoping for, and maybe beyond. Students apparently yesterday showed up in droves to get tickets, so that's cool. When you go to college, I'm not saying you pick a school based on the sports programs, but when they're pretty decent and you get excited, that's a fun Saturday or whatever, weeknight. Go out there. I don't have to pitch, you know, 20-year-olds. I really don't know what they do anymore. I'm old. But apparently the student turnout should be pretty good. And that adds to the environment. The other thing they added, just like VGK has and the Raiders have, these RTC buses that go from different places around the valley, there are buses directly from the Thomas and Mack. I mean, I guess you could walk from the UNLV campus, but, you know, it's hot right now. Still a pretty good walk over to Allegiant. So those buses were a big hit. So I don't know how many buses they're going to have on Saturday. It might be 15 or 20 buses, so that'll get the students over there. And I'll just tell you personally, I was sniffing around for free tickets. Like, we don't have any more here. We were giving them away for the last 2 weeks in limited amounts. I was looking for free tickets today, and my connect was like, nope, don't have any. So there's some momentum going into this game.
Oh, I guarantee it. I mean, I can tell you right now, doing the first Whiskey Stadium remote ahead of Idaho State, just being able to engage with, you know, obviously the students are going to be there and backing the team, but you just talk to the people in the community who come down, just the Rebel fans, talking with them a couple weeks ago, I could feel the excitement. I could feel the energy. I could feel like that the momentum that Barry Odom built wasn't lost. They everyone around talking about the excitement for Dan Mullen, the excitement for the new season, seeing how this team turns out. This game against UCLA is going to be a big test for the Rebels. It's going to be great. I'm excited to host again this Saturday, 3 o'clock, Whiskey Stadium. But yeah, it's great, man. I love seeing the support and the hype around this program.
I need a legal expert, so we're going to get one in 5 minutes. Xavier Pope is going to join us for his Thursday spot. The FBS Oversight Committee made a big, big change for college football and the transfer portal. I think it's going to go to court. I think this is ridiculous. I freaking hate it.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
lawyer, and host of Suit Up News, Xavier Pope, joins Cofield and Company now.
All right, let's bring in EP here on this Thursday. Xavier, what's going on? You all safe in Chicago?
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing city. I feel pretty darn safe. Great city.
Trying to be subtle there, but I had to start laughing. Okay, let's start out with some of the stuff you had up on Threads. Your Threads account is tremendous. I saw your comment that you said the biggest issue with the onset of college football and the NFL is all of a sudden people totally get lost in what is happening on the field, lose sight of what's happening in the real world. I know there's a balance. I feel like in some ways America needs football to chill a little bit, but at the same time, I get it, what you're saying, like not take the eye off the prize.
Yeah, see, the thing about it, Steve, is sports has been where the biggest advancements in society have led from in terms of integration, in terms of leadership, and those have been high profile. And so the origin of sport is political. It was part of war. So I think that when we think about sports, we trivialize it over time. But when you have, it's great to go watch. You want to have fun. You want to enjoy your life. You know, it's a challenging time for us all. And I think that everyone understands that. But there is a certain segment of the population that does believe that that is the opportunity for us not to cue in into what's really happening in the real world. And that's the unfortunate part about it.
Well, that said, I'll push off takes on Thursday Night Football for a couple minutes. That was the plan anyway. Xavier Pope is here with us. Okay, I do have some college football to get into, and I do have some legal stuff here. I don't know if you saw it today, but the CFB Oversight Committee changed up the transfer portals in college football. What they're looking to do is not two portal periods, just one, not 30 days, just 10 days. I hate this. And, you know, part of keeping your eye on the prize, I think, is also fighting for workers' rights. And I don't think that most fans can grasp that while college football players are making money, and some of them are making a lot of money, they're not that dissimilar from you, and we should be rooting for them, not the zillionaires in college football. I think restricting college player movement is absolutely un-American.
It is un-American. You're right, Steve, and I don't think the law is on their side in this area. That's where it got them in the transfer portal, creating a transfer portal in the first place. You're treating it like trade. All right, it's already treated like a trade. It's already treated like free agency. It's you have a situation where you can't just change up the rules because you don't like it without collective bargaining. And I think that's where we are right now. And so many different things have happened over the last 10, 15 years and how college athletes are being treated. I've predicted how this is going to happen from the get-go. I mean, we just don't have collective bargaining yet, and that's just the last tipping scale in terms of what's going to happen. It may not be immediate. It may not impact the rules right away, but I don't see this being far off from some sort of litigation.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things happening here. First of all, from the House settlement, I think the college football overlords learned nothing. The message out of that is like, maybe you want to talk to the players and get their reaction and work together when you make rule changes. That's one. And I also think there are traditional powers around college football who are looking at the transfer portal and NIL, and they're like, wait a second, we're not winning like we used to. What the hell's going on here? I celebrated what was going to happen, and I'm seeing it happening now. So I get their motivation, but man, it is freaking arrogant if they think this is going to get pushed through and there's not going to be any challenge.
It has to be, but I mean, that's how it's been. I think that what you are looking at is over the course of time, college athletes gaining more foothold in their rights, whether it's their name, image, and likeness, whether it's their ability to go wherever they want to go, whether it's the ability to be treated like their employees, a specialized labor. This has always at some point received some sort of pushback, and it's nothing that can happen really to truly stop that tide.
I didn't see this take off, and I think it will when it's officially announced. That halftime show this year will be with Taylor Swift. Goodell was kind of leaning into it. Taylor Swift on the podcast with the Kelce Bros a couple weeks ago, they were teasing it. Reactions are going to be very strong on Taylor Swift doing the halftime show at the Super Bowl. How about you?
I mean, Swifties, you know, she's a billionaire. this is one of the most popular people on the planet. So, but she's done it before. And so this isn't a new thing for her. So her deciding is pretty much up to her whether, okay, been there, done that, or whether she's going to stick to these massive tours that's been making her a load of money as opposed to an NFL halftime show making her none. At some point, wouldn't a halftime show pay someone? I mean, why does it have to, this trend has to continue? And why wouldn't someone like Taylor Swift be the person who does it?
Well, you know, it's been kind of back and forth. You know, there was a point where the NFL was like, the performer will have to pay us. And I was like, that is stupid. That's not going to happen. I don't exactly know what happens now. I don't think they get paid a lot if they are paid. My guess is most of them do it because of the attention and the boost you're going to get. She doesn't need the boost, but she's so into football right now, now that she's engaged to Travis Kelce. I guess if she wants to do it, it's her decision.
Yeah, but you say that visibility, but we had Prince do it. You had Bruno Mars do it. You know, you had Michael Jackson do this. You know, you just had Whitney Houston just singing the national anthem. And so the biggest stars in the history of stardom in the modern era have sung in an NFL game.
Yeah.
And so Taylor Swift is no different.
Okay, this is a change. This is a departure from what we've seen. There is part of America that looked at the rundown the last 4 or 5 years and they were like Kendrick Lamar, Usher, Rihanna, LA Hip Hop, The Weeknd, and we're like, enough of that. We know what they were looking for. But here's the thing. I don't think they were looking for Taylor Swift.
That's just a narrow-mindedness. Yeah. You know, they probably wanted some, you know, a country singer, and that represents, you know, a certain portion of the country. I mean, no problem with that. I mean, there's every Sunday night football game, there's, you know, there's Carrie Underwood singing the song that takes you into the football game. Yeah. So it's not that they're not included in it all, but that's just part of the wider culture war at stake anyway. People definitely would be looking at the Swifties and Taylor Swift that way because of the politics and where she leans.
Country will get back in, I'm sure, sooner than later. Go follow Xavier Pope up on Threads. You had a great video. This is what a catch. You were watching dude and lady playing one-on-one basketball. You think it was a date, and you made a comment on his game versus her game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right after this. I'm going walking past that same park, and yeah. I just happened to, and the girl and guy playing a game. They were, you know, talking to each other. It clearly looked like they were dating each other, and so I was happening to get a couple of really great shots of them playing. She was drilling it from the outside. He couldn't hit his jump shots. He was taking her down low. He was D-ing her up too. So it wasn't like a soft game they were giving each other.
I mean, let's be honest. Maybe I've just gotten too old where I'm not competitive. Don't you just let the woman win?
Well, if you're gonna make it, do let her win. You gotta, you know, I can't say that, Steve. No, yeah. take her, punish her, yeah. Win
punish
the game,
her. Get her in the post,
all the smack. And then you can buy dinner afterward to make her feel better.
Sure. I actually witnessed something similar at a local bar that had a pop-a shot, and I was watching a lady and a dude, and the lady clearly played some kind of basketball at a high level because she was unreal. The guy sucked. But guess what? In pop-a shot, you can't take her down low, use your size, bully her. He just had to eat it, and he got rolled.
I mean, hey, men and women can compete against each other when it comes to dating and love. I'm sorry.
I'm not going to tell people, because I don't know if that was a married couple, but I'm not going to tell people don't get married. But if you get married, I think you need to behave a certain way. And Tyreek Hill is a friggin' mess. I want to play some audio here for you. This was from the Daily Mail in the UK. Tyreek Hill and his wife, Keita, just split. Listen to the terms of what Keita got in this divorce deal.
NFL superstar Tyreek Hill will be paying Keita Vaccaro, his now divorced wife, between $20,000 and $50,000 per month in spending money on top of a one-off check for $500,000, according to court filings. In addition, she will receive $457,000 to spend towards legal fees, $100,000 to spend on a new car, exclusive use of their marital home, and a $5.5 million waterfront condo in Miami, with Hill paying the mortgage, insurance, utilities, and internet. The astronomical sums are simply to maintain the status quo of the once married couple.
Now keep in mind, Tyreek Hill was married, had a child with Keita. Best reports have him with 10 kids with 5 different women. I don't understand how any of this works in the courts, and especially when his career is done.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to depend on that the wranglings of that system, because he can apply in terms of modification based on what he makes when he leaves the field, and also depending on the state that the children are in, they receive a certain percentage of his earnings, and so you'll have that, and he can. Those will apply to the respective states that those kids are in. I mean, I don't know, it could be 10 different states. I don't know. Yeah. But that just really complicates the legal situation even more. And he has to pay for lawyers, not just while he's playing, but definitely more after he's done.
I mean, at a conservative number, he's going to make a lot of money, you know, before the end of his career if he doesn't screw it up and get himself basically pushed out of the league like AB. I can only imagine if you're 35 years old, you've made all this money, and then you're like, oh my God, I am responsible for other human beings for like the next 16 or 17 years. And there's no guarantee that he doesn't have more kids.
Yeah, there's that. And he's not really great on camera. So
no, that like to show some great TV career. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I'm like, oh, that's probably not going to happen. Okay, let's hit some football here for about a minute. What do you think of the Micah Parsons trade from the Cowboys to the Packers? And do you think the Cowboys pull an El Flopo tonight on Thursday Night Football?
I think that everyone expected it to happen. I said this last week. I spoke on air when it first broke. And so I think that a huge mistake for the Cowboys. You saw the complete difference that he made. He was a difference maker on that defense. So a big L for them. And this is the first game. Eagles. Go Eagles. Go Eagles, because they're going to run all over the Cowboys.
They probably will. And right now, a lot of people are very negative on the Cowboys without Micah, and Jerry Jones just seems kind of, I'll be nice, very long in the tooth and doing things through emotion instead of being a true businessman and running his football organization in a responsible way. EP, love you, buddy. Appreciate the spot. Have a safe and good weekend in Chicago. Sorry, I find it funny. I'm not going to find it funny when the troops are coming in, but that will suck. Thank you, buddy.
Love you guys.
Okay, there he is. I keep saying that Chicago people, and they're like, yeah, it's not funny. It's not funny. A reminder, coming up on Saturday, you can pregame for UNLV and UCLA at Whiskey Stadium, right across the street from Allegiant Stadium. On the scene will be ESPN Las Vegas and our Griffin right here from Cofield & Company. You can try the Mullen menu choices, the Mullen burger, or the chicken cheese steak. Again, 3 to 5 at Whiskey Stadium. There's specials on Miller Lite. There are seltzer specials, tons of drink specials. And if you want, you can try the Mullen Challenge. That includes a slider, a Mullen burger, fries, tots, a chicken cheesesteak, chicken wings, celery, carrots, and you got 15 minutes to do it. Otherwise, you got to pay the price. It's not a bad price. And if you do it, you get a T-shirt, you can spin the wheel, where you can win another Mullen Challenge.